Welcome back to another episode of the Domestic Boyfriends Podcast. My name is Dean, and always with me is my beautiful co-host, Vincent.
Hello!
And we are going to be continuing our series on Code Lyoko, covering the next three episodes. Do want to make it a point that next episode will be the last three episode batch. Once we get to episode 12, we are going to have the other half of the season be a retrospective from the latter half instead of the detailed episode by episode reviews. Just to make it easier both on us and for you with your viewing experience. So yeah, expect another one of these styles, and after that you're going to hear us talking about the entirety of season one. But yeah, let's do you have any words before we get into it?
Let's get into it.
Okay, you heard the man. All right, so this is Code Lyoko episode 7, Image Problem. So I think that the way that I want to do these, or at least, okay, so like a brief synopsis beforehand of the episode and then like episode details. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so this episode was right off the back end, I think the last episode or two episodes before this. This is, just to give like a bigger picture, this is after, this is post Mumi of undigitalization or redigitalization. I don't remember what we call it. Materialization.
Post Yumi falling into the digital sea.
Yes. So, just to give context,
having plot armor.
Yeah. Just to give context, this is post her going into the digital sea, and the premise of this episode kind of ties back to it, because we see in the beginning of the episode, Yumi and Aelita are off on a mission. That is the preface of the beginning, and during that mission we get some very an odd thing happens to Yumi where she just disappears. I do want to make note, this is the ice area. I love the ice area, it's my favorite area. And Yumi disappears only to come back out on the other side of the teleporter or the transporter, where Jeremy finds her, and everything seems kind of okay. Except she doesn't feel the best and is in the infirmary when he brings her back to school. Let me look through my notes here. They're in the infirmary. Post-infirmary, Yumi's acting weird. Like, normally Yumi's the calm and collected one, but ever since her trip to Lyoko and she came back, she's just been acting all types of weird. And she keeps saying that she wants to go to the factory. She sounds like an addict. You know, every time she looked in Jeremy's eyes, she was just like, give it to me. She's like, I want to go to the factory. Which,
as a kid, and I remembered it immediately as soon as like the episode started playing. As a kid, I would refer to this one as the grunting Yumi episode.
Grunting Yumi.
Because for the first like third of it, she only grunts at people. Hey Yumi, you doing okay?
But she wants the factory, so she wants to go, and that's what she keeps, she literally keeps asking him like she's a little child. But speaking of the factory, I think this is a great segue into a fun fact that Vincent had told me before the start of this episode, and it has to do with the factory.
Yeah, so Code Lyoko as we've like mainly me freaked out about like the layout of the town and like it not making any sense and it just being kind of weird. Turns out this is based off of an actual town on the outskirts of Paris, France. And the factory itself used to be it is a real location and looks pretty one for one, except like the real world factory is pure white. It's called the Renault factory, and it used to be a car manufacturing plant. And the pictures that you can find online, you can find some pretty solid pictures of the factory, as well as the academy that Kadok is based off of. It looks pretty darn one for one, including a picture that I had sent Dean here, which is the first one that I had sent you, which has some characters from the cast just like put in front of a real life picture of of the academy, and
it looks like it. It looks shot for shot.
Like it's out of the show.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell at first that it was actually a real picture, with just some people imposed on it. But it's really cool.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things about, I mean, shows in general, like television shows or giant media productions in general, are when you can like link it back to like real shoots. Like Hollywood, of course, and other like studios besides anybody working out of Hollywood, like you're so, at least nowadays, we're so used to the green screen and you know, made sets that it's really interesting when we see them like being shot on site. And even cooler, in my opinion, is when animated pieces of work are based off of real locations, because this is a French cartoon, but when you can see the spot, or like when there's real world familiarity with it, I think it's just so much more cool. Like, is there deeper ties with like the studio or the creators in this specific location, or is it just like, oh, this was a cool spot we saw one time, so we just decided to put our school setting in here, you know what I mean? Like, it's it's really interesting. I really like it. But yeah, that's a really cool fact. He threw it at me before the start of the episode, and I was like, ooh, that's cool. There's this line where, so Yumi just keeps asking to go to the factory, right? And everybody goes to lunch, and I abridged some of these notes, and Aelita, after Jeremy meets with her, goes off to a disturbance in Lyoko. And in this interaction of them going and eating, Odd has a great one-liner saying, do I smell fish or cheap perfume, when Sissy comes by? And if I could make I need to make like an insult book just based off of all of Odd's lines. But the weirdest thing happens after this interaction between Sissy and the gang. Sissy is like, hey, Ulrich, you should, like, when are we gonna go on a date? And then Yumi, very, you know, we talked about a couple episodes ago, you know, there's lots of tension there. So much tension. And then just weirdly is just like, how about you just go on a date with her, Ulrich? And everybody's stunned. Complete stunned, concussed everybody. And then Ulrich's like obligated to do it. It did cut. It like cut.
She just walks away and she's like, I'll see you after school at this place at this time. And then they never touch on it again. Yeah, so I guess they went on
like
a date, maybe?
Has parental authority over Ulrich. Like, you gotta go out with her. And then everybody's just
Yumi
like,
Yumi gave me permission.
Yeah, Yumi let you do it. So, and then followed by the fact that the principal, Sissy's dad, wants Yumi to come to his office, which, in watching in sequence, seemed like he was mad at her because she was like, yeah, Ulrich, you should go on a date with Sissy. And he's just like, oh, no, you don't. But that's not what happened. In fact, she goes to the principal's office, starts putting hands on him. Like, she's acting really weird. She gets he's like talking to her about attacking the nurse from earlier, because
she attacked the nurse earlier in the episode, and his response to that is saying, this is not okay behavior. I'm gonna for attacking one of my staff members, you're gonna have 2 hours of detention. And then And then he was like, and if this behavior continues, I might have to call your parents. And that's where Yumi starts having an issue.
No, don't call my but, parents.
Like, you know, assaulting a staff member equates, at the school, equates to 2 hours of detention and not notifying the child's parents that they assaulted an adult.
Man.
An adult.
I'd hate to know the former teachers, if they made it out alive. They're like, aw, you killed the science teacher. I guess we're going to have to call your parents.
Yeah.
In 3 hours of detention.
And he went to try to call her parents, and she takes the telephone and, like, knocks him out. And we see on her big-ass forehead, Xana's symbols start appearing, which makes me wonder and think, oh, maybe that's the reason why everyone's forehead is just so massive in this show.
In case they need to put a Xana symbol?
In case they need to be able to put Xana's symbol on there. Ah. So that means anyone who has hair covering their forehead must be safe.
Will never be Xanified.
Yeah.
Aw, man. That's like Jeremy. That's it.
Yeah, Jeremy's the, like, Ulrich the only has, safe
like,
one.
Ulrich has, like, very short bangs. Yeah. So, I just can't get around. I can't get around the fact that she was just like deadpan. You can't call my parents. And then he starts to raise his hand. She's like, you can't call my parents. She's like, whoop-hoo. And she like punches him, knocks him out with the
Not
phone.
My parents.
Not my parents. And at the same time as this, Aelita goes off and she finds this weird energy field that's being guarded. And at first, I thought I was mishearing it, and it said by a guardian, so I just said being guarded, but we figure out a little later that the energy field is called a guardian. So I thought that I was being stupid, because it is also being guarded by, like, cockroach, like, what are they, clackeroaches or whatever? Clackerots? Like, little tiny things. It's being guarded by those. And, yeah. So, at the same time that Yumi's beating the principal's ass, Aelita finds a disturbance in Lyoko. And, oh man, something steamy happens. So, you know how Yumi really, really wants to go to the factory, right? Well, she walks in on Jeremy as him and Aelita are talking, because she's like, I found something. And then Yumi comes in and takes Jeremy's glass. Oh, yeah, she takes Jeremy's glasses and she starts talking to him using her womanly ways or middle schoolerly ways. And right before anything can happen, after being persuaded to go to the factory, I would just be so, like, how do none of them find it weird that she wants to go to the factory so much? Like, maybe it's because it's just Jeremy, and Jeremy wants to go to the factory a lot because he wants to talk to Aelita. But, like, how is no one being suspicious of this? Like, why do you need to go to the factory? She keeps asking it. Like, is no one questioning it at all? That's what I would be questioning. Why do you want to go to the factory so much?
And why is she talking like a robot?
Yeah, like, so odd. Anyway, odd.
They should have known the minute that she complimented Sissy and said that she was pretty.
Yeah, as soon as she said, like, hey, you should go out with Ulrich, is that probably should have been the first one, because they're, like, a thing. But no one talks about it because it's a middle school friend group.
Yeah.
But Odd and Ulrich come in right before anything happened. They catch them in the act. And Ulrich, in my notes, Ulrich, big mad. And then Yumi, evil laugh. Because Ulrich barges away, and then Odd's his homeboy. So he's just like, I don't like you right now. He gives a face to Jeremy and walks away with him. And then Yumi is standing there, makes an evil grin, and Jeremy walks out the room. Keep note of that. Next scene, we see them leaving science class, and Jeremy confronts them. And honestly, I think Jeremy also has talk no jutsu, because the way that they kind of just ended the beef right there was super fast, and honestly, if it was in the real world, probably would have lasted a couple more weeks, because he confronts them, and they leave and they try to go back to his room, and they find that his equipment is destroyed. And in my notes, I have awkward staring commences because everybody just kind of stares at each other awkwardly. I gotta say something. Why don't they change things in the school? Like, why don't they trade rooms, or why don't they? Because Xana knows a lot, right? Like, over these last 6 episodes, technically, and if you include this one, 7, Xana, like, he wants to get rid of them. He can't get rid of the he can't get rid of the factory because he's in there. But he wants to get rid of them. But they know this. They know that Xana also, like, keeps his memory, like, because it's a computer program, it keeps the memory or knowledge that it's learned even after the reset. So why don't they change stuff around? Why don't they move rooms or move the technology? His equipment's the only thing that can connect to Aelita besides the supercomputer in the factory, but he just leaves it there. But they all figure out that it could be, it probably was Yumi. She was the last one there doing some evil laughing. And all three of them go to Lyoko. And we get another amazing sequence. I think this takes up like two or three minutes every episode. Whenever they do the sequence where everybody does like an action shot on their skateboard.
Yeah.
And like also, whatchamacallit, on a scooter and everything. This isn't the episode that I think it is, right? No, I think it's next episode. No, it might be the last episode. Yeah, I think it is that episode. They all go to Lyoko. And Yumi, like, shows up awkwardly. She's, like, at the end. They're all just like, we need to go, because this could be Xana. And then Yumi's just waiting at the door, and just like, finally, the factory. Are we going to the factory? I've been wanting to go to the factory this whole time. And then they all go to Lyoko. And they all go inside and get digitized, except Yumi. Yumi uses her strong arms and holds them together, and she doesn't get ported in. And then Auric and Odd are like, whoa, where's Yumi? And then they gotta go save Aelita. She's getting jumped. And then we figure out, within like a couple minutes of each other, that Yumi was actually trapped in Lyoko this entire time. And Xana sent a clone body into the real world. So, as I stated earlier, this kind of ties back to the whole Yumi materializing in the first place. So there's like a couple ways to think about it. One, when Yumi died, or at least her data was stuck in Lyoko, this may have just created open data within the program that Xana took a hold of, right? Or Xana probably thought, because she could be materialized out of Lyoko, that creating a clone body and doing the same thing with her, because it's already been a guarantee, is what he should do. But either way, I think it's interesting because they tied it back with Yumi. Because they could have done this with anybody, any of the other two. And it probably could have been the same premise. But I think it's interesting that they tied it back to Yumi, because she was the one who did technically die and then got brought back.
Yeah.
But the rest, there's a pretty interesting thing that starts happening where Yumi, at first, when I saw like this episode, and then as the premise kept going on and everything, I was like, is this an episode, excuse me, where Jeremy gets attacked in the seat? Because a lot of those episodes are to come with all 4 seasons of this. Because Xana knows that they're all in the factory. So sometimes he just sends people out to the factory to attack. Remember the zombie episode. That's relevant. But Yumi starts destroying the labs, seems to have gone to a different level, and she's... She's not on a different level. She's on the same level as the teleporters, or the transporters, and then she just starts breaking off stuff. It's like breaking wire, and then Jeremy goes down there, and he's just like, hey, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, no, I don't know. And then she like fools him, and then she starts beating Jeremy. If you had to describe the beating that Jeremy took from Xana Yumi, how would you describe it?
That Xana Yumi could join Monday Night Raw.
Like, he's getting bullied again, except there's no jocks in this. So Jeremy doesn't really get bullied. But this is what would happen if there were jocks in this, because he got beat up pretty bad. Then, what is it? Oh my gosh. Ulrich the Goat is clutching his deflects this episode. He's killed a couple people already. A couple of Xana's goons.
Odd doesn't know math.
Yeah, Odd does not know math. He's just firing away his arrows as if he didn't... As if he doesn't have just 10 of them. But
he
Aelita...
He doesn't know how many arrows he has. He doesn't know how many life points he ever has unless Jeremy's there. He does know how to count to 3, as he said, because of Ulrich and his triplicate attack.
Yes.
God. so stupid.
And Aelita pulls out another magical Jedi trick just out of nowhere. And she's like, if we create a fake Yumi, it will fool the Guardian Orb, which is what Yumi's trapped inside. And then it will think, because a Yumi is on the outside, that it doesn't have to trap the Yumi that's inside of it. For some reason. And that's what she does. She creates a fake Yumi, and then immediately the orb just goes pop. And then regular Yumi is there. And she has to wake up. And then... they notice that Jeremy isn't responding to them. So she's like, one of us has to get out of here and go make sure Jeremy's okay. And then Yumi's like, I don't know how many life points I have either, Odd. So I could have 10, I could have 1. But either way, I'll be dead weight. So she needs to leave. And the only way you can get out of Lyoko is dying. You die in the game, you come back in real life. So Yumi comes out, and then it's Yumi v. Yumi. Evil Yumi versus regular Yumi, and it's dramatic. And honestly, they have a lot of still shots that have like kicking and stuff. But they also like the I'm not gonna blame the animators, because I don't know if there was a fight choreographer for this. But you'd expect that fight choreography is the thing that they have in the show, because when they're in Lyoko, it looks really good. But I'm not sure if that's just because of the CG, because their traditional drawing did not look as good when they were doing a fight scene. If I do remember right, in the future seasons, it does get better, just due to... Do you remember, like, the season 4, season 3 stuff?
Yeah.
Because of that, I think it got better. But that comes with the territory of what happens in those later seasons. Not gonna spoil you guys on that. But... a dramatic fight between UVV Yumi. Tell me your favorite fight from the UVV Yumi pay-per-view match. If you have
my
one.
My favorite fight was definitely like... Well, portion of the fight at least was definitely right at the end where Xana Yumi picks Jeremy up, holds him above her head, and is about to throw
him. That was
a
real wrestling move
down
the pole. She just like T'Challa killmongered him. Like, I am king.
It's incredible.
But during this time, Ulrich the Goat, you know, he's in there. He helps Aelita get there, and it's hilarious that she does successfully throw him down this pipe. That we don't know where the pipe goes, but as soon as Aelita does the return code, is this where the time juice is? Is that where the time juice goes? Like, is that Does it ever get explained how this machine works?
I don't think so.
It's just an expanding wave. Well, that's where the expanding wave comes from, apparently, is the tube that Xana Yumi was going to throw him down, which I think Xana would know about, but he just threw him down it anyway. But yeah, I put in here, the pipe is the past powers. Great job, me. And then at the end of this, after they go back in time, all of this, along with the episode where Yumi gets materialized, kind of shows the gang that materialization is a lot easier than they anticipated it would be. If Xana was able to create a digital life form clone of Yumi and send it into the real world, it's less work that they have to do when they're trying to analyze the actual code for materialization, which we talked about it at the end of that episode, but why don't they just run the program again? Like, did it evaporate? It's not like it was a one-use item in a video game. You just find the program again. I don't know. Maybe Lyoko eats everything that comes into it, and then it has to be spat back out eventually. Like, if it's not a person. Because there's something that's bringing them back after they go inside. I feel like Jeremy just has to find that. Anyway, nuance.
Yeah.
But that's the end of episode 7. How many Xanas out of 10 would you give it?
I'd give it a 4.
I
thought the episode was pretty okay.
It was very easy. You could see its line as soon as the premise was introduced to us.
I feel like I would have liked it a lot more if they actually showed per se how Xana did their thing. I know
process or something like that.
Yeah, or controlling or knocking out Yumi. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but the sound effect that played at the start of the episode was a very specific one, and it's been a while since I heard it, but was that the protozoa?
Yeah.
It wasn't, yeah. Right? But, yeah, no. It sounded like it, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. I didn't even think about that.
But this wasn't the protozoa, and they didn't show off the protozoa for, a while.
Yeah, no, that's... yeah... I don't know.
Because... but that's its sound effect, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could have been, because if you think of all of the... its abilities, kind of would align with it. Also, giant octopus kidnapping, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess it would... yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It could have been. Because, I mean... you don't really... out of all of them that we know, we don't really have any graceful ones. You know what I mean? Don't have anyone... the hornets are just gonna, throw her on the back of a crab? So, I think it would be a protozoa. Just based off of everything that we have... mm-hmm. That we have so far. But... I give this a 5... I like it because of the ice area, but I don't even think we go back to the... oh, no, we are in the ice area throughout the entire episode. The fight kind of brings it down for me. Not the fight where Ulrich just, carries the team. The Yumi v. Yumi fight, I like it, but honestly, the choreography on it, not my favorite. But it does get a lot of points back by the fact that Xana Yumi was throwing wrestling moves on Jeremy, so... definitely a middle of the road episode. It doesn't really have... it has some story implications, I guess, because of the whole materialization thing, but in this batch of episodes, honestly, I think this is the most boring, because the next two ones are pretty banger. I have a lot of notes on the last episode that are just me screaming.
Oh, you too?
Yeah. Yeah. But the next episode is End of Take, and this is the alien episode. This I can recollect this episode like the back of my hand because it's just so simple with the premise. A director of a very questionable film is on the campus, and after showing the kids his latest movie, he is signing autographs and everything. But the thing that gets mentioned that piques the interest of the kids is that he mentioned that his new shooting location was going to be an abandoned factory in town. So I guess they have the only abandoned factory in town, because they didn't even suspect it was anywhere else except their factory. So Ulrich, in all of his wiseness, decides to try and pressure him out of it somehow as a middle schooler, but instead Ulrich feeding him all of this information that seems like it's terrible is actually attracting him to the factory, saying stuff like the electric doesn't really work, people died there, stuff's falling apart, the director's eating it up. He's just like, ah, it's great for the setting of the movie. I wanted to shoot a scene like that in a place like this. So that is exactly opposite of what they wanted. And in fact, the director wants to bring Ulrich on as a technical advisor for the film. This kid's like, what, 8? 9? How middle school? 11?
How old are they? What, they're in middle school, right? Or are they in high... I don't even know
what the academy is. No, they're like in middle school. So they're like 12 or 13 at best, right? He's hiring him.
Ulrich is 13.
Hiring a 13-year-old. Why not? And I put in my notes...
That's against labor laws.
Well,
it's in France, so we don't know.
Yeah, that's true. They are French. And I put in my notes, how are these kids getting these weird opportunities? Like, just recruiting a kid here, driving and riding inside of an electric bus back in 2006 that can go over 130 miles per hour. Maybe it was kilometers per hour. Because they're French. Huh. Didn't think about that one. But anyway, I'm just like, how are they getting these weird opportunities? It's crazy. Also, Sissy gets a position because she was able to convince her father to let Ulrich skip class. Because prior to that, the director was like, I don't care about you, kid. Your dad might be the principal, but this doesn't mean that you're, like, the son of the president of the United States. Or the minister of France, in this case. Anyway, she's not that important. So, she gets her position by convincing her father to let Ulrich skip class for this position, and everybody on the team's kind of for it, just because they need a way into the factory, or at least need eyes in the factory to make sure that they're not going on to the deeper levels, find the supercomputer, or anything like that. So they make their way in. Sissy and Ulrich awkwardly make their way in like a pseudo couple, and Vincent, have you heard these crazy, like, rules this guy has? Like, if this would... I don't think this would fly in, like, an actual shooting environment.
No.
No cameras, no phones. No. People sleep on site, and there's guards at every door to make sure no one leaves or comes in. Like,
there's
what?
There's no functioning canteen or toilets.
Yeah, there's just porta-potties.
In any way, shape, or form. Maybe there's functioning toilets. I don't know. From my understanding and from, like, our understanding of, like, the show, he never gets access to the rest of the factory that actually has function, like, you know, electricity.
It's just the supercomputer, and literally, we see multiple times that the supercomputer goes down a little bit, and that's where the pods are. So it's not like it's this whole different section of the factory.
Also, like, the movie that we see a very little bit of, at the start, right? It is a ripoff of Alien.
Whoa,
what it is.
Whoa. It's a unique piece of fiction right there.
It's true. It's a unique piece of fiction with easily the strongest pistol I've ever seen in the world, because that caused like a shotgun blast hole to appear in that thing's chest. But the most important thing is, this is a horror movie director. What does Ulrich do to try to dissuade this guy from like using the factory? He tells him all of the things that a horror movie director would want to hear about their shooting location. This place is haunted. There's rats here. It's really dangerous. Which also, like, that is a red flag. If he's like, this place could collapse on me, I should bring my crew here.
Yeah. How much money do we have invested in here? That's fine. Let's get the shot.
So you're telling me this place is getting cheaper and cheaper by the hour for a shooting location. Mm. I guess it was already free because it's an abandoned factory.
Yeah, but he has to pay the people.
It's true. The shooting, his rules and everything are crazy, and then he shows off his original design of the green Predalien.
Yes. On a cross. It's on a cross.
It's on a cross.
Crazy, right? And then in my notes I have, is that a xenomorph? And then I also put under that, I bet Xana possesses it. And boy, am I right. But what is it? It's so weird. Like, the scene after they introduce the xenomorph, I have down in my notes, old people start comforting and patting down Ulrich. Because, like, he states something to the director, and they're just like, oh, no, everything will be great. And, like, it'll be good. We'll shoot tomorrow. And then they all just start, like, touching him, which is weird. It kind of reminded me of, like a Jordan Peele movie. And then Sissy gets relegated to be the first kill of the movie because the director doesn't give a shit about her, which I think is hilarious and kind of fits in with her character.
I work on my lines? Sure, here.
Literally, crumbled piece of napkin, lines, 7 letters at most. And then... It cuts to night, which Sissy and Ulrich sharing a tent. They just like put the kits together and they're just like, fuck it. Also, like, his parents, like, obviously the principal knows, but like, his parents know that he's staying the night in the factory? Like, question mark? I don't think they stay locally, so like, it might not be, they might not care. But Ulrich goes and runs off, and then Sissy sees him, and Ulrich goes to the lab. And then we also see, that Xana possesses the alien, which I will be calling a Xanamorph for the preceding rest of this episode review, because that really works. It really works out. But the Xanamorph finds them as Ulrich is trying to communicate with Jeremy on the supercomputer. Sissy catches him, and then a bunch of goo just starts dripping on them. You know, Vincent, you know why this is unique? Because it's not acid. It's goo.
True. It's goo. It's just sticky.
Which makes me wonder, did that thing have all that goo inside of it? Like, where is the goo stored? Also, is that all of its goo, or did Xana create more goo somehow? You know what I mean?
Why isn't it even able to stand? It's just a suit.
Yeah, but it's Xana possessed now. It has his little ghostly thing. It's like Wuya from Shaolin Showdown. Yeah, you guys like that show, don't you? We'll get there.
Jesus.
But then they're just running off, and then it cuts to morning, and the production team and everybody start to like get up for filming, and then they notice that the alien's missing, and then they just start a manhunt for the kids because they're also missing, and they assume that the kids have the missing alien and go after the kids maliciously because they stole the prop. These are grown men and women, but who, in quotation marks, I have the two youngsters disappeared. So they're not very happy about that at all. Their Xanamorph got taken away. And then they get, I have it in the notes, they get cornered. I said they got stickied by the Xanamorph. And are also being hunted by the people who are also getting picked off by the Xanamorph as well. The next scene is really interesting, but I don't want to say it's really interesting. I'm sorry. The rest of the gang goes to the factory, and what do they do, Vincent? They see that there's armed guards there. They're like, how are we going to get past it? What type of expectations do we have for this next scene?
None? No. I don't even know. I think I liked this episode as a kid. And I rewatched it today. And I think I blocked the scene out of my brain. I did. What happens next?
There's a guard there, and the guard's sleeping. So what do they do to get past the guard? They tiptoe around the guard. The guard hasn't heard any of the commotion on the lower levels, which, granted, that probably is like, that's an entire level, like literal level of the factory down. Probably like closer to like 30 feet under where he is. But how did they get down there? The factories, the level that they're on is underwater, technically, right? It's in the basement.
Yeah.
The kids, whenever they go to the factory, they always jump the rope. Like, they literally jump off, grab a wire or something, and then make it down to the elevator to go to the rest of the factory. How did the crew get in there?
Because
they have equipment. Is there like a... I need to look this up. Give me a second. Because the factory... I don't think there's an easy way to get into the factory. Or at least... Wait.
Probably just through the front door, right?
Yeah, but the front door, there's not anything to elevate you down further. Now I got pictures of the real world island in my search history now. Yeah, there's no way to get down. They just go on the wire. Oh my god, I just spoiled myself for an episode. That's crazy. Anyway. Anyway, it seems cool what was happening in that episode. The crew gets in there. They're going down to the supercomputer because they have to go to Lyoko. Odd goes to Lyoko while the adults are looking for Sissy and Ulrich, and also Yumi's looking for Sissy and Ulrich. Odd goes in there. He goes in and attacks the Hornets because Aelita is going to the tower, and Yumi helps Sissy and Ulrich get out of their sticky situation because they got stickied up by the Xanamorph, and they have to run because none of this is good for them, and they're going to get sticky again if they just get... it's not like he's eating them. He's just making them sticky. He's like sticking them to the wall. He's not like offing them, at least until later. Not until later. But he just like stickies them to the wall. And then Odd has to save Aelita in like a 1v7 against a whole bunch of Hornets, which I don't know how much health points they're supposed to have at the beginning, but Odd takes a couple hits there and he's kind of trooping along. So all of the bad things I've ever said about Odd, he kind of makes up for it right here. Because dude is just tanking it. He's making sure Aelita is safe. And then we get this funny situation where the director confronts the kids. And he's like, where did you take my suit? And then he sees the Xanamorph as the Xanomorph has already, like, oh no, he gets knocked out by the Xanomorph. He sees the Xanomorph, is like, I'm your creator, you have to listen to me. And then the Xanomorph just, like, stickies him to the wall. And then 2 seconds before that, two of the cast find them, then the Xanomorph finds them, and then they all get sticky to the wall. Meanwhile, Yumi and Ulrich kind of have to defend Sissy as they're getting attacked by the Xanomorph. A really cool thing in this environment, you know, I really love the ice zone. They go down an ice slide, and then they find two towers. They find the Twin Towers. Which one is real? What if one of them goes down?
We'll never know. We definitely don't have a way to tell via, you know, the markers on Jeremy's screen and showing the real tower.
Yeah, but, you know, Xana, they really didn't think about that, did they?
Yeah, plot schmott.
Plot schmott. Anyway, Aelita tries to use the Force, honestly, to figure out which one is the real one, and then just kind of, like, banks on the fact that her intuition's correct, goes into the tower, while Yumi and Ulrich are literally dying because the alien has them by their necks, literally choking them, and Aelita got it right, woohoo protagonist, and everything gets sent back.
Well, there was a lag spike, and they briefly got it wrong. Lyoko pranked them.
Yeah. They're like, huh? Oh?
Jeremy, I got it wrong. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Boom. I wonder if they just needed, like, to get to the specific, like, to get to a specific runtime. And they're like, ah, what do we do? We need, like, an extra 5 seconds on this thing.
We need literally a microsecond. Oh, okay. Say less. And then everything gets returned back to the past right before they get introduced to that dude. So the beginning, technically not the beginning of that day. It was the beginning of the day before because that's when everything had happened. Which makes me wonder, is there like a preset? Like, does Jeremy pick a time on the calendar to use it for? Or... like, because how do you really determine, like, obviously us as the viewers know it's the beginning of the episode for whenever it is, right? But in the show, how do they know when to go back to? You know what I mean? Is it just arbitrary? Is it, like, arbitrarily chosen for that time, which happens to be the beginning of the episode we watch? Or is it like, oh... how many hours before Xana starts using stuff in the real world? You know what I mean? Because, like, you'd think that yeah. Jeremy would maybe want to go back. Could he go back further? Could he go back, like, maybe right before the people get to the tower or get to the factory with all their equipment and then make a change from there? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking too hard about a kid's show, but... the change that happens this time when they go back into the past is that Ulrich tries to convince him that it is a good idea to use the factory, and in that way, the director, like, doesn't want to use the factory anymore. I don't know if it's because the factory, like, he thinks that the factory was a bad idea because a kid is telling them it's a good idea, or... is it because he actually doesn't like it and someone going against him was what he needed as, like, an odd case of support, you know? Like, someone's trying to push me down. I think
specifically that Ulrich lied to him and said that somebody else had shot a movie there before.
Oh! Wow, I completely missed that. Okay. Okay, and this guy was trying to be 100% original. Okay.
Yeah, because he walked out and was, like, talking to his producer on the phone. He's like, yeah, on second thought, I don't think this is a good idea. You know, this movie wasn't even my idea. What do you mean you don't want to produce my movie anymore?
Yeah, and starts going down the whole thing, and then ends the episode with the gang being like, yeah, we didn't have to do that. I'm going to give this a 6 out of 10. Maybe 6.5. I like it. Alien reference. obvious Xana attack is the alien. You get some odd stuff, you know, for everybody that likes odd, including Vincent. Yep. It's in the ice area. It checks a box for that for me. There's choking tentacles. But, you know, if you're into that, that this episode has that for you. And there's mystery, because Aelita could have lost the 50-50. But what are your opinions? How did you think of this alien homage episode?
It was a pretty solid episode overall. I give it, like, a 6.
Okay. Yeah.
It was fine. There was nothing wrong with it, but there was nothing super, super memorable except for the alien design, which is cool, but that's largely because it's
based just off the of Xenomorph. Alien. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
This felt like a filler episode, you know?
Proper. Yeah, nothing really... Like, nothing really was progressed. Important. Yeah. Nothing will probably get referenced... yeah.
Well, no. One thing immediately gets referenced, but we'll get into that in a moment.
Oh, yeah. But next episode is... I think this is my favorite out of the next... out of these three episodes that we've done. Called Satellite. Opening up in the ice area again. Third episode in a row. Gotta love it. Ice area, best area, desert area.
Not only opening up there again, but, and this is the reference, literally used a shot from the previous episode of the wasps just circling around what was the real tower.
Yeah. You know, we don't talk about that. Maybe they're not left over. Maybe it's just something happening in the background that we don't know about. It was definitely
it's reused true. Assets. It feels weird that we're seeing that as the active tower, because as we get in, when we get into it, like later, it's not.
Xana just has another active tower.
Constantly.
But we see. Oh yeah, no, I have it in my notes. Xana Tower being guarded and seemingly activated. Yeah. And then we get a shot of science class, but then everybody gets a phone call, and this is the whole premise of this fucking episode, is that everybody gets a phone call, and there's strict laws in this school that say nobody can answer their phone, and if they are caught on their phone gets confiscated, and then everybody panics because their phones get taken away, no more cell phones. Jeremy's just like, how am I going to talk to Aelita? Well, how are we going to know about Xana?
I'm shocked by the teachers' responses to this. Because, like, it was the entire staff that did this. But, like, literally everyone's phone went off. Because
it happened. It didn't just happen in a class. It happened the entire academy.
So, yeah, every student. And probably other places, too.
Also, but, like, students with all... Every student has a phone? Europe must have a good.
It's true. But, like... If everyone's phone is going off, obviously this isn't something that the students are doing on purpose.
Unless.
Obviously something is wrong.
Yeah, no, very true. And I think it wasn't just the students' phones. I don't know if we got shown faculty, but it seemed to just be within that vicinity.
That's true, I guess.
To which we get the joke, Xana sure is going to be happy about this, coming from Odd. And then Jeremy immediately says, this could be Xana's doing. To which Sissy and the squad meet up because they finally have a common goal. And it is the fact that they hate not having their phones.
Tablet generation.
Yeah, right? Jeremy goes back to... I think it's just Jeremy, or it might be Jeremy and the gang. No, it's just Jeremy. I remember now. Jeremy goes back to the supercomputer to talk to Aelita and goes to scan Lyoko because he believes that all of their phones rung at once because of a Xana attack. Odd and Ulrich are like, we're going to go steal back the phones. And Yumi's like, is that really a good idea? And they're just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
we're just going to do it. And then she meets up with Sissy's gang because she said that she was going to volunteer with the protest.
And the principal's having, like, this whole episode, the principal is just sort of having, like, a aneurysm the whole time.
Because he took away tablet kids' phones. That's why.
Yeah, he took away their phones, the kids complained, and his response to that is telling the other, telling other members of staff, I don't know what we're going to do with these kids. Oh, I know what we're going to do with these kids. Let's disable the cell tower so that the school just can't call anyone. Because schools have never, ever had emergencies where they need to reach out via phone at any point.
Yeah, to which Ulrich, after Odd uses his 10 levels in Rogue, if I had to make Odd a class, he's definitely a level 20 Rogue Bard multi-class. Does he ever use his Bard half good? No, but he be making all of them jokes and be entertaining everybody. Somehow gets the key lock out of it, steals back all of their phones, and they go check out the tower, or the actual cell tower that our good old friend Jim is trying to disable. I don't think Jim knows how to disable a phone tower. He looks like he's just, like, poking at wires. To which we find out Xana is in the phones, I have in my notes here, and Xana proceeded to use Thunderbolt and then knocked Jim out on his ass. P.S. in my notes, Jim sucks at electrical work, LaMau. And then they have this, I don't know if this, in my notes, I don't remember if this line was said before or after they take him to the infirmary, but I put down here, he's a regular live wire, and then awkward cutaway. So I'm guessing that the cutaway was to the infirmary, but Odd just witnessed, you know, Ulrich almost saw Jim lose his life by falling outside of the bus, but both of them just witnessed him become, like, a barbecued man. And then the first thing that Odd's just like is, I gotta crack a joke on this motherfucker. He's just like, you know what? He'd never live it down if I didn't make fun of him even when he's knocked out. And then we cut over to Yumi and everybody. This is before that. We do cut over to Yumi, who is with Sissy and everybody else, and they sign a petition to her father, the principal, to which, you know, he's just like, no, this isn't going to work. Also, we found out that someone stole the phones back, so we're not going to let this slide. And then Sissy keeps going against her father and is like, we need to protest, which Yumi agrees with, because she wants to make sure that everybody here is safe, because if it is a Xana attack, no one's going to be here to defend them if they're on Lyoko. And then everybody gets Jeremy gets the realization of why Xana would want the phone lines, and they figure out that he wants satellites. And then I have in my notes, the Xana network is going live. And because he wants the satellite, everybody's like, we're going to go to the factory. And you know who else goes to the factory in this episode? Vincent?
Kiwi.
Kiwi. Kiwi's like,
Kiwi, the best boy. But before Kiwi goes to the factory, very important thing. They head... We get an update on the side plot that's happening right now with Sissy and starting her revolution.
Yes, yes.
Where, like, Yumi walks into the gymnasium and Sissy's like, "Ah, I wish you could have been there for when we made this petition." And she shows it off to her dad that walks in. He's like, "What's going on here?" She's like, "We made a petition to stop this nonsense." The petition? all that they made for the petition was a piece of paper that said the word petition and then had a bunch of signatures on it. There's no info about what the petition is about whatsoever.
But it's a petition.
It's Sissy's work ethic.
Yeah, at least she's trying.
It's true.
She is trying. But then they get Kiwi's awesome. I thought Kiwi was about to be on the skateboard with Odd.
I thought so too. Kiwi unlocks the door, follows them there.
Right before Odd makes it into the sewer.
Yeah, and then Odd's like, well, I guess you're going to come with me now.
As a child,
because he's a reasonable owner.
As a child, I always thought that Kiwi was going to go to Lyoko and they were going to have like a dog, like Red 13 from Final Fantasy.
It would have been awesome. He would have been Odd's mount.
Or maybe they could be like Kiva or Kiba and Akamaru because he's a cat. And he's a giant, and he could be a giant dog.
That would be incredible. Can you imagine Kiwi shooting laser arrows out of his mouth?
Or like his tail could curl up. They should tell us to design. Season 5, we'll
bring
us know.
It back.
Yeah. We'll design everything.
But he rides up on Jeremy's scooter, and they get up out of like the tunnel to go to the entrance of the factory, right?
Yeah.
No one carried Kiwi up. Kiwi just hopped out.
Yeah, he's a G. And then, you know,
I had it later down in my notes, but like we'll cover it again. Kiwi must be sentient.
No, he proper. Is. Oh, you mean like higher consciousness?
Yeah.
He is smart. Especially later in the episode, he does exactly what they want.
Like I said, we'll get back into it. But Kiwi he must be.
He might have accidentally went to Lyoko. Maybe that gave him like an amp.
It's true.
Because all of them, it could be like a, because honestly, all of them, like, when they're like, oh, we can go save people in the real world, like, we'll defend the people in the real world, it's not like they're in Lyoko anymore, you know what I mean? Like, they're only as capable as their 13-year-old selves. It's not like they're in the game and they have, like, their battle card or anything. So, they don't have abilities. So, my headcanon is, it's very Sword Art Online-like. Where they keep, like, the basic knowledge that they're of the what their body could do and whatever muscle memory they have from being in Lyoko translates to their body to a certain extent, except anything that would be, like, crazy. Like, Odd doesn't have his same agility, right? But he could probably do similar things that he could in Lyoko just because that's him, right? It's actually him in the digital world, and then he just becomes a flesh and flesh and blood body in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. So, to a certain extent, they all can fight like how they do in Lyoko, to the point where their body can keep up with it, right? So, like, Odd probably can't jump wall from wall and hang on to it just because that's how he is in Lyoko, not in the real world. But, just like the reason I bring this up is because they always stay behind. So that means that they're at least somewhat capable, or maybe they're just like, fuck, we have to do something no matter what. But that could kind of explain some of Kiwi's sentience. The fact that he was attached to, like, this higher network. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe it brought up his intelligence a little bit. But he's the man. When they get to the factory, they all go on like the zip. Not it's not a zip line. They just like ride wire down to like the elevator entrance.
Yeah.
Except Kiwi. Kiwi had to run all the way around. Poor Kiwi. He found the way that the cast and crew from the last episode got down there, and he had to take the long way. He didn't leap.
All we know, this is his first time being there, but he found his way.
Yeah, he's a good boy. He could have just... He has a big mouth. He has like a... He also has a big head. So, yeah. I mean, like, he could have just chomped down on that wire, probably. He would have been fine. But, yeah. So, Kiwi joins them. Yumi stays back to protest, and Kiwi's in the supercomputer just chilling with Jeremy, which I think is funny, because I thought he was going to go into the pods, or just chill in front of Odd's pod, but he's just sitting there with Jeremy. Him and Jeremy are bros. And then, as they go and make their way to the Yoko, Jeremy is studying. He's trying to figure out why Xana would use the satellite, besides, like, in my head, I was just like, because then Xana could broadcast himself around the world. But of course, that's not what Xana wants. Xana doesn't want united destruction for all of the world. Xana just wants to get rid of these kids. So he wants it because it has a highly destructive laser beam pointed down on Earth. Somebody called the Justice League because someone took the Watchtower's design and then made it in Code Lyoko. In my notes, I just have a lot of running. And also, this episode confirms that Xana is in the tower. We had gone back and forth on the last couple episodes of where Xana actually was located. But this obviously confirms it word for word.
Xana's in the tower. Odd says, and it makes me scream, that Xana wouldn't attack himself when he literally did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He just did, but okay, he wouldn't. But he did, but he wouldn't.
Remember that one time he brought bulldozers into the factory?
Never happened.
Yeah. Or that one time Yumi, you know, last episode, was just pulling out random wires?
Yeah.
Yeah. But Kiwi is the goat because they need someone to get a message to Yumi, and none of them have their phones, of course. Jeremy can communicate with people because he has the supercomputer, but he can't directly contact her because she doesn't have her phone. So Kiwi, the best doggo ever, has a note attached to him, and he runs out. He makes it out of there. How the fuck does he use the elevator? Did he take the stairs? Are there stairs? Did Jeremy, like, lead him up and was just like, go ahead, boy, go do it? Or was he a G and he found his own way out of the factory? Kiwi's the best character in this entire series.
Yes.
Except the one episode where he bites Odd and then zombies, but spoilers.
Yes.
They run out there, the protesting, and then Kiwi makes it over to Yumi. Like, this is what Vincent was talking about with the sentience thing. Kiwi went from the factory all of the way back to the school, however long that distance is, and then finds Yumi specifically. Not any other person, Yumi, on whatever order from the person that isn't even his owner, Jeremy. Like, obviously dogs can, like, have different levels of respect and, like, understanding with different people, but Jeremy is just, like, his roommate, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it Odd? It's Odd and Ulrich, right?
It's Odd and Ulrich.
Okay, so it's not even
Jeremy, his roommate. Jeremy, it rooms by himself.
Yeah, so it's not even his roommate. It is one of his closest friends, but Kiwi listens to him to the T. And
teleports to Yumi.
Yeah, just like, I just think he's a fast boy. I think he might have found some bacon on the ground, and then he just ran. Or maybe they gave him, like, they gave him, like, some liver or something. He went. He gone did it. And then she finds... So she doesn't really get it at first. She's just like, Kiwi. And then Kiwi gets yoinked up by the principal. This is the second time in 9 episodes that he's been yoinked up by the principal. Me and the principal got problems.
Yeah.
And then...
Dog walks up to a random student. She says hi to it. And she gets in trouble.
And yeah, he doesn't even question. He's just like, is that your dog? And she's like, in my office. Oh, okay.
Yeah. He doesn't even do that. She says, she acknowledges Kiwi's existence, and then he walks up, and he's like, what is this? Grabs the dog, and then tells Yumi to go to his office.
Go to my office.
Like, what is she even being sent there for?
Yeah, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. He assumes that it's hit, but assumes that it's hers because she's interacting with it, but there's no precedence for this because Kiwi's existence is unknown to everybody except the gang. Anytime that Yumi has, anytime that Sissy has confirmed his existence, it's always led to her trying to get them in trouble for having Kiwi, but that eventually gets put back because of the time travel. So, yeah, a little odd. Speaking of odd, they find hornets and they're walling. I've never seen such a cheap tactic done by an enemy. Just this wall of hornets in Lyoko blocking off their way to the tower, and there's only two of them because Yumi is still over there in the real world. And then I have it here in my notes that Yumi dips out because she finds the letter from Odd, and then she just, like, leaves. Have you ever been able to leave a principal's office that quick and that fast?
I want to talk about that real quick.
Go ahead.
Right. Because it's fresh in my mind for it. Because, like, the principal was, like, being upset, right? The principal was, like, telling her.
Yeah.
It, just, like, trying to explain his... Basically, he was trying to explain his plight to her with Kiwi just next to her. And trying to reason with her. And she full-on looks at him and says, "Everyone should leave now." And then she just runs out the door and slams it. And then opens it and says, "You too." And then closes it again and just goes.
Yumi has a terrible track history when it comes to convincing people to get out of places. Because remember when, like, the nuke was going to go off? When the nuclear power plant was going to melt down, and she was just like, "Everybody needs to leave." And they're just like, "Oh, it's a kid.
Why should we leave?" And yeah. She's like, "You don't listen to me."
same kind of thing happens in this episode. I literally think it was episode 6, too. That's funny. That she dips out. Does she get to Lyoko? No, she doesn't.
I forgot. She goes and finds Sissy. Yeah, and she's like, "Oh, are you finally here to help?" And she's like, "Yes, I am. And in fact, we should take it to the city." And then just starts marching everyone towards the city.
Yes. And then, because she's trying to get them away from the school. Because she thinks that the school is the location that Xana is going to hit with his satellite laser beam. Because at this point, Xana has full control of the satellite laser beam. So, Odd sacks himself so Auric and Aelita can get to the tower. Literally just sacrifices himself. One man's it.
I don't understand why Jeremy's like, "One of you has to sacrifice yourselves." Because, like, they show off specifically when Odd's like, "All right, I guess I'm going to do it," and just runs in. That they could just, like, walk around the poison. And, like, it's just a couple wasps. Or, just kill them.
Or, you right? know, those are, like, the two most agile people in their group. The cat guy and the other guy who's a ninja. Are you telling me who that they couldn't have
turn
gotten...
himself into three people.
Are you telling me they couldn't have just... You know, he could have shadow cloned their asses and then just triplicated and made a giant ladder and threw them. You know, there's creativity
it's
there.
It's true. There's plenty of things they could have done. But what happens is Odd's like, "Well, I'ma do it. See ya," and starts running in. And then it's a cut to Ulrich, and Aelita's like, "Eh?" And Ulrich says, "He's nuts. Let's go." And then just starts running away.
Yeah. No, they could have, honestly, they probably could have taken them, like, between Odd, like, when he hits his shots, but they're just standing there, and Auric has triplicate, like, they could have just taken them out, but it's whatever. They took a different path than the one that was poisoned.
It's true, it's so true.
Like, Odd literally went down an empty hallway, and then they were just like, "Oh, well, we can just go down this way.
Hey, can we run on this bridge over here that's unaffected? Okay, cool."
Yeah, only if Odd could have done that with us. You know, he could have just, you know, covered our asses while we were walking over here so the hornets couldn't get us. No, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
the whole time, Jeremy's just, like, marveling at, like, how... He hacks into the government's website, right?
Yeah. He's in the laser.
He's watching the laser target things. He's not even trying to stop it from doing anything. He's looking at it and literally says, like, incredible. This technology is amazing. I wonder how accurate this is. And then it just full on zooms into Yumi's skull.
I wonder how accurate it is. Oh, okay.
Uh-oh.
And then it's coincided with the shot of them going into town for the protest, except as soon as they they're not even really in town. They're just like out of the grounds. No,
they get like 2 feet away. Yeah,
they're like out of the grounds of the academy. And then
and Jim's like, oh, this is weird. What's going on?
Yeah.
Here?
What could possibly be happening right here? And then the lasers start, Odd makes it back to the surface to find Yumi, because obviously, like, she's the target of it. And then it's just them dodging lasers for the rest of the episode.
Almost. Don't forget the most important part. Before Odd makes it back to Yumi, the principal shows back up. And he walks up to Yumi and says, "That's it? A month suspension. I'm sick of it." She has done nothing this whole time outside of...
He doesn't even know if that's her dog.
Exercising her right to be like, hey, this is kind of messed up. Sure, she kind of caused the students, including the children, to go off school grounds and whatnot. But yeah. She wasn't the one that formed that group. His daughter was. And she did largely nothing the whole time and gets a month suspension. But a couple episodes ago, when she assaults a staff member, she gets 2 hours detention?
Yeah.
And not calling the parents.
You know, when you put it that way, it makes it seem like the writing's inconsistent. But... what I have to say is, the laser cannon's cool.
The laser cannon's sick. They're just dodging it the whole rest of the time.
Yeah, and it's like, so it's coincided with Aelita getting into the tower, and Ulrich getting her there, fighting off the Hornets, and then it's just this dramatic ass shot of them being like, we need to make it to the gymnasium, so they have to cross the entire track field, and Odd makes a dash for it, or was it Yumi first?
It was Odd first, and Yumi purposefully waited a second, yeah, so that she could put some distance between her and Odd,
so it isn't
so
a
that
double
he
kill.
Wouldn't get caught.
Yeah,
and then she trips because everyone has to trip,
and then Yumi, seconds before she gets obliterated, return to the past now.
Boom. The laser full-on stops an inch from her head, which, that is not a part of the return from the past protocol. It does not stop time. It does not break the... well, it does break the laws of physics, but it's still, like, not usually that much. Yumi has stronger plot armor than Reiner does from Attack on Titan.
Yumi is the original
plot armor
and
Titan.
And he wants to die.
And he wants to die.
The guy has... It's like Deadpool's regeneration. No matter how much he actually wants the sweet release of death, it's not coming to him. Deadpool, because of his cancer, his super cancer. Reiner, because... The author loved to see him suffer. Even in the end, when everybody has a pseudo-happy ending, Reiner's just like, man, I can actually die now. But then he's like, no, I can't. But I bet a piece of him really wants to die still. Reiner really didn't have... I don't want to start talking about Attack on Titan, but he really didn't have any resolution with Eren towards the end. It was all just kind of like everybody else. And then Reiner was just like, maybe I don't want to kill myself anymore. Because Eren died. And we're the same person. But yeah, so that's how the end happened with this one. Alita finds the tower. It was in a waterfall. Return to the past now. Yumi doesn't get fried. And I don't have anything for the end of the episode for notes wise. Do you remember what they changed? Did they warn the government?
No, they simply put up a poster saying turn off your phone before class.
Ah, boo, boo. Boring answer.
And Sissy walks out and she's like, a bunch of narcs.
Sissy, that makes sense.
She's annoying as hell, but man, she is a funny character.
Yeah. I think this episode is the best out of the three. Doesn't give a lot plot-wise, but is fun as hell.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, we get Kiwi. Kiwi's a big thing. We get a laser cannon. Pretty cool. Jim's in the episode. Ulrich and Odd are delinquents in this episode. It's always great when they're a tag team. They work best off of each other. You know, I give it like a 6, maybe 7 out of 10. I definitely think it's one of the strongest episodes we've gotten out of the 9s that we've watched. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I really like this episode. It made me scream a lot.
Joy?
It kept me in anger. Just like, you know, of the injustice that's being done to Yumi. But it's okay, because like all these horrible things are happening to her, but she has plot armor. It's fine. It's yin and yang, right? She'll get detention and like be like, have so many like horrible things happen to her during an episode. But at least she didn't die.
Yeah, she almost did.
Yeah. But yeah, no. This episode was very, very fun. I'd give it like an 8.
Oh. Okay, I'm comfortable with a 7 then. Xana went big. You know, this isn't the biggest thing. He went a big bear and almost caused a nuclear meltdown that could have destroyed, from what we know now, all of, what, France?
Yeah.
The laser cannon was definitely the most metal thing that he did. Also, satellites are stuff that come back in the future, so... that's definitely something interesting to think about. But yeah, that was our three episodes. Like I said before, we got one more episode like this, unless we choose to do the rest, as a retrospective, but keep an eye on those, keep an eye out for those, I mean. And, I'm still enjoying watching these. We have a couple ideas we're shooting back and forth for some future episodes. Once we do the end of season one, we'll probably take a break for Code Lyoko after the end of season one, and then do some other things and then get back into it. But Vincent, do you have anything else that you'd like to talk about from this or in general?
That's all that I have right now.
Okay, cool. You know, with everything going on, I brought this up to Vincent. Eventually, I'm going to be making a new social media account to probably Blue Sky for the podcast. I created a Blue Sky. Vincent, have you created one yet?
I do.
Okay, cool. Well, the podcast one will be hopefully in the link of this episode. Going forward, we're no longer using X or Twitter. We talked about this a couple episodes ago, but we are moving over to Blue Sky. So I am at, oh man, this isn't easy with the handles. You can find me at Lying Mask, all one word, all lowercase. Vincent?
You can find me as Vincent Barlow. Dot blue sky, not official.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah. And then I'll put the pods blue sky in the description for this episode. Hasn't been made yet, but yeah, we're switching over from that. YouTube's all the same and everything. Our artist, Ultimate Maverick X, shout out to them. You can find them on that name on all social media platforms. Look forward to more episodes, and thank you for listening.
Stay beautiful, everyone.